Welcome to Bedford County Speaks, a weekly public affairs program that introduces you to the work, lives, and lifestyles in Bedford County. Today's program over News Talk 1310 WBFD is hosted by Lloyd Roach. Bedford County Speaks is heard every Saturday at this time. Now let's join Lloyd for this week's discussion on Bedford County Speaks.
Thank you, Matt DeFazio, and good morning to you. Welcome to Bedford County Speaks, the weekly public affairs program over News Talk 1310 WBFD. Today's program is brought to you as a public service by DestinationDelco.com. From Philly to the Brandywine, that's DestinationDelco.com. And by Thomas Chevrolet Subaru, right here on Route 220 in Bedford. That's Thomas, saving you time, money, and worry for over 100 years. I'll return in a moment with today's guest, Larry Smith, from the Bedford County Historical Society, when Bedford County Speaks continues.
At the turn of the 19th century, Bedford was a small but growing frontier town in the southwestern Alleghenies. The opening of the West had begun, and along with it were families eager to start a new life. Among them was Demetrius Gallitzin, an unassuming but dynamic Roman Catholic priest, whose mission was to evangelize the region for the Son of God, Jesus Christ. Father Gallitzin was eager to form a new church in this bustling town called Bedford. With the assistance of some willing Catholics, in 1816 he established a new parish called St. Thomas the Apostle. The new church on East Street at the end of the borough was small but functional. Years and two more church buildings later, St. Thomas the Apostle would grow to a major moral and community force in Bedford. Next May, St. Thomas the Apostle celebrates 200 years of continuous and faithful service to Bedford County. We hope you will join us in celebrating this significant bicentennial with the parish family. St. Thomas the Apostle, serving Bedford County since 1816.
DestinationDelco.com, a new way to experience Delaware County. From Philly to the Brandywine, we have the Crossroads, Riverside, Main Streets, Main Line, and the Brandywine. Five different ways to experience Delaware County. Check us out at DestinationDelco.com. Be sure to listen to Bedford County Speaks, brought to you by DestinationDelco.com. Saturdays at 8:30 a.m., just before Rush, on News Talk 1310 WBFD.
The very first program we did in this series of Bedford County Speaks way back when, I think it was almost 40 shows ago, was with Jillian Leach at the Bedford County Historical Society. And we have returned to the building not again to talk to Jillian, but to talk to one of her major contributors, Larry Smith. And today's topic is very interesting to me in particular because I have some ancestors from the period in which Larry is going to speak. He has put up an absolutely magnificent exhibit at the Bedford County Historical Society on the Revolutionary War. Larry, this, first of all, visually is an absolutely magnificent presentation you've made here. Tell me a little bit about why you decided to do it.
Well, because of the fact that I have amassed a collection of antique items, swords, cannonballs, different items that were used during the Revolutionary War period. And I wanted to exhibit those, but also to tell a little bit about them and about their use. So by combining that with then centering on Bedford County's role in the Revolutionary War, it all came together.
From what I've read about this, Bedford County and the counties around it were pretty important in the supply department, weren't they? They made a lot of things like ammunition and things like
yes.
that, did they not?
Yes. The Fort Robideau is called the Lead Mines Fort. It was in, of course, Bedford County at the time, but in the Sinking Valley, Sinking Spring Valley in what is now Blair County. And so, yes, they did produce a lot of lead for the ammunition. Throughout this Bedford County region, there was different mines that contributed to either lead or saltpeter or various other minerals. So, yes.
Well, I know that from my previous study in this, the Berks County was also very prevalent in this kind of thing. So what did the former large Bedford County contribute mostly to the revolutionary effort?
Mostly defense of the frontier. The Amerindians, who were basically from the Iroquois tribes, were being aggravated by the British and instigating different attacks on white settlers on the frontier. So I would say that Bedford County because the militia that was formed within Bedford County region were basically considered rangers on the frontier, and they were basically keeping a buffer between this area and the more populated eastern section, which would have been from Cumberland east.
Yeah. So from what I've read about the French and Indian War, one of the authors made the claim that the relationships that were bonded between the British and the Indians were really a setup for the American Revolution. Do you agree with that assessment? Or?
Yes. Of course, during the French and Indian War, the British, being that they possessed the land, so to speak,
right.
They wanted to keep the Indians on their side as compared to them being on the French side, which the majority were. So whenever the revolution came about then, of course, the British wanted to maintain their status with the Indians. And so the colonists, who now became rebelling, the rebels, they, of course, didn't have that Indian protection like the British Army had.
Yeah.
So you had the problems arising because of that. The British were able to easily tell their Indian allies from the previous years who to attack or whatever.
So the settlers were really still part of the problem, I guess, from the Indian viewpoint, weren't they?
Yes, they were, because they the Indian viewpoint was that nobody really could own the land. And
sure.
So any settlers coming in here to this area were really, even though they were getting legal documents from the British, who, again, just claimed possession, the Indians really did not accept that that was legal in their eyes. They still felt that the land was theirs to hunt on and to move through as they wished.
I wonder what it was like to be in the Revolutionary War period here in Bedford County. Have you learned any more about that?
Well, there were basically three groups. The Loyalists, who were simply wanting to remain loyal to the British Crown. They weren't interested so much in causing problems, and a lot of those loyalists moved out. We have records of a lot of movement down into the Tennessee, Kentucky area. There were then the Tories, who wanted to remain loyal to Great Britain, but the Tory faction tended to be the disruptive ones. They literally wanted to cause problems. And you have, in 1780, the Tory expedition to try to rouse the Indians who were concentrated at Katanning to come back down through this region and cause whatever destruction they could. So you had that, and then you did have the individuals who were rebellious, who simply, by rebellious, I mean that they were adherents to the patriot cause to gain the liberty from Great Britain. So in essence, you do have the tour between the Tories and the other colonists, you did have a lot of problems and static.
One of the things that interests me about this period is that the battle, or the fight, more of a skirmish, I guess, at Concord and Lexington happened in April of 1775. And for the news of that to get out to Bedford County took some time. It's always been interesting to me that the colonies really had very good communication considering what they had to do it with. It was someone on a horse, was it? That was about the best they could do.
Early on, yeah. All the colonies were encouraged to create what they called the committees of correspondence, which did consist of, like you say, individuals who were willing to ride from one location to another and spread the news of what was going on. And the Bedford County formed its Committee of Correspondence in 1775, early on, and they actually did, whenever they received word that the other colonies were doing this thing, they set up their own set of resolves, which essentially, whenever you think of some of the southern states, you have the Mecklenburg resolves, which are touted as being an individual declaration of independence by that region. Well, Bedford County had its own set of resolves also, which they adopted and said, we want to participate in this, we want to help the other colonies, and we want to do whatever we can to get our liberty.
Our guest today on Bedford County Speaks is Larry Smith, and you can hear he's quite an authority on this subject of the Revolutionary War. And you want to have a real treat, come over to the Historical Society and see this exhibit. It takes up the entire back room here, and it's really, really fantastic. How on earth did you make these wonderful frames that you put them in?
Well, actually,
this is something.
The frames, though, the Bedford County Historical Society already had.
Really?
And they use them for other exhibits. So whenever I was thinking about doing this for the Revolutionary War subject, I created my panels to be the same size.
To fit in so the frames. Yeah, okay. So, boy, they're really nice. And just so you know, listening to this program, when you come here, you get to walk through the exhibit by one frame at a time. And they're all at eye level. Even the child can see it. They're really, very well laid out and very well presented. And again, our Smith is Larry Smith. And Larry, this topic is of great interest to people, I think, even today, because, you know, the politicians always talk about the revolution of this and the revolution of that, and this was a real revolution taken on by the people who had a pretty good life here in the colonies. I mean, for the most part, the farmers and the merchants had a pretty good deal going. They had commerce going with other parts of the world, and many of them gave it all up just to have this independence and this freedom. That's really the story, isn't it?
Oh, yes.
And this this whole notion of giving up your freedom and your farms, which are usually very productive and big.
Well, it was a gamble because nobody knew which side would actually win.
Yeah.
So in any case, no matter who, no matter what side you were on, it was day to day waiting to see what would actually come out of it. So, in that sense, people who were, well, they were not on a subsistence type of living, but they did live somewhat day to day, season to season. Yes, they were putting a lot on the line.
I want to talk to you a little bit about the Native Sons Go to War. That's one of your panels here. And we're going to do that right after this break as Bedford County Speaks continues.
Hello, I'm Mark Thomas. So often, when you want to buy a car or truck, you're told to make sure you get a good deal. So what is a good deal? Is it just the price of the vehicle, or is it something else? At Thomas Chevrolet, we think that a good deal means everything that's important to us. Things like our multi-generational reputation for honesty and integrity, or the free inspection service you get on your purchase after you roll out of here, or the fact that your car or truck has been checked thoroughly by our factory-trained service department to make sure it's safe, or that we're a family-owned dealership that feels a responsibility to our customers. That's what a good deal means to us. How about you? The next time you need a car or truck, visit Thomas Chevrolet Subaru first. We'll show you what a good deal really is.
Thomas Chevrolet Subaru, where buying a car or truck is always worry-free.
This is Olga Herbert with the Lincoln Highway Heritage Corridor, and you're listening to Bedford County Speaks over News Talk 1310 WBFD.
At the turn of the 19th century, Bedford was a small but growing frontier town in the southwestern Alleghenies. The opening of the West had begun, and along with it were families eager to start a new life. Among them was Demetrius Gallitzin, an unassuming but dynamic Roman Catholic priest whose mission was to evangelize the region for the Son of God, Jesus Christ. Father Gallitzin was eager to form a new church in this bustling town called Bedford. With the assistance of some willing Catholics, in 1816 he established a new parish called St. Thomas the Apostle. The new church on East Street at the end of the borough was small but functional. Years and two more church buildings later, St. Thomas the Apostle would grow to a major moral and community force in Bedford. Next May, St. Thomas the Apostle celebrates 200 years of continuous and faithful service to Bedford County. We hope you will join us in celebrating this significant bicentennial with the parish family. St. Thomas the Apostle, serving Bedford County since 1816. Now, let's head back to today's Bedford County Speaks.
Our guest this morning is Larry Smith of the Bedford County Historical Society, and he has put on this magnificent display, which is here right now. You come over and see it, about the Revolutionary War and Bedford County's role in the Revolutionary War. I want to remind you that today's program is brought to you in part by the Bedford County Chamber of Commerce, which proudly supports and celebrates the business community of the Bedford County region. To learn more, visit them online at bedfordcountychamber.com. And also Destination Delco in Media Delaware County and Thomas Chevrolet right here in Bedford. Larry, these panels you have up here describe each thing, and so I'm not going to make you go through them chapter and verse, but I'm particularly drawn to this panel that says Native Sons Go to War. What kind of Native sons are we talking about, and are these families still around here?
Yes, that panel actually lists the different individuals who were born here or moved here prior to the Revolutionary period. So prior to 1775, they were individuals who actually did live here. There a lot of times when people look at lists of individuals, they sometimes group the individuals who were born elsewhere, reside elsewhere, fought elsewhere, but came here after the war and then died here and was buried here. That is a separate thing. The individuals who actually was from this region is what's covered
in
that panel.
So you can actually come and see some family names.
Hopefully that's right. The idea that people will be able to look at it and see a family name, possibly then research and discover if it is their ancestor.
Now, the panel right behind you says Militia and Continental Line. I'm not sure what that means, so maybe you can explain that for us.
There were two different forms of serving in the Army, and the militia was the first that had been in existence. That was where you basically had each small region, whether it was a township, a larger town, say Philadelphia, might have had its own militia, but each one was trained by the individuals that lived there. The officers of a militia unit were chosen by the individuals in the unit. So you would get together, say, a group of 30 or 40 individuals, and they would then, from their ranks, choose who was going to be their captain. It was that type of arrangement. The Continental Line was different in the sense that it was the first organized army in the U.S. And we had a militia unit from Bedford County that was sent up to the Boston region whenever the Siege of Boston was going on, and George Washington was accumulating and congregating all the different militia units. That's whenever then the Continental Army actually came into being, because he had them coalesce together. They were then trained by individuals, so they were all trained similarly. And so that's the difference. The militia was more untrained, but they were volunteers who wanted to defend the area. There again, whenever I mentioned about the Rangers on the frontier, the local militia tended to be that type of function, whereas the Continental Army was the one where you traditionally think of an army marching from one point to another and engaging in battle.
That's the best explanation I've ever heard of that. I've been hearing about it all my life. I wasn't really sure what it was. And I remember reading about Baron von Steuben, who came to Valley Forge during the winter there to actually try to train these militias. Right. And one of the things that they said was that the militias from various parts of the country all had their own ideas on how this should be done. So the genius of George Washington, he was almost like Lawrence of Arabia to bring all these people together. Right. I mean, that's kind of what was happening, wasn't it?
That's exactly what, yes. And later on in during the war, Washington did not want even militia units after the Continental Line had been formed.
You bet.
He did not want militia units joining into battles because they were very disruptive. They didn't follow the directions and so forth. And so that's where a lot of individuals who they try to search out their ancestors and what they did, and they find they were in a militia unit. They still sometimes will say, well, they served with Washington at the Battle of such and such. Well, if they were a militia unit, they probably did not, because Washington did not want militia disrupting the army itself.
Isn't it interesting that to this day, 2016, you hear every so often the news about some militia unit up in Michigan someplace that have broken off, you know, and have kind of started their own deal. That kind of thing is still around, isn't it?
It's still the same concept of a local group getting together. And I did want to mention one other thing. Militia, they were still required to serve a certain period of time, but not the same as Continental Line. The Continental Line or Army was the, I'll say the individuals were engaged for a certain period. They would sign up for either a year or for the duration of the war. Whereas in the militia, you tended to have shorter periods tours of duty. A tour of duty might go anywhere from just 2 weeks to maybe 2 months at the most. The idea was that with the locals, you did not want to have your farms left unattended. You did not want to have your families left unattended. So militias in the local sense were set up where you had different classes just arbitrarily named, that if I was in fourth class, my neighbor might be then in the fifth class, and the neighbor on down the road might be the next. Well, they would call out the militia whenever they needed to have a tour of duty covered. They would send word out that everyone who had been put in class five was to answer the call. They would go to the nearby fort, whatever, and they would be then assigned a tour of duty that might, like I say, last only two weeks even.
Well, that's interesting because, as you described it, if I sounds correct to me, that the Continental Army was really the precursor of the U.S. Army,
yes,
as opposed to the militia.
That's exactly
which
right.
Which might have been maybe closer to what we know as the National Guard.
Exactly, yeah. Yes.
Okay, let's move to another one of these panels, which is of particular interest to me. You have patriots without muskets, and I was particularly interested in this because what do they do if they don't have a gun?
There was a population of Quakers in this region, and there actually is a valley named Quaker Valley that's part of Bedford County today even. The Quakers were a pacifist. They objected to serving in any war or whatever. So whenever it came down to the point of either requesting people to serve or somehow contribute, the Quakers were permitted to pay a special tax, which then said that they were supporting the patriot cause, but they just did not want to fight. That was essentially the one.
So they were pretty much the first conscientious objectors for a fee. Almost.
Oh, yes. Yeah.
Interesting.
The other thing that you could do is contribute supplies. And so the court records that are here at Bedford County show a lot of instances where an individual might give a cartload of hay or something like that. I mean, some sort of goods that they had either grown or was able to produce, which might be needed by the Army. There are instances of individuals contributing cloth or just yarn that would be could be used in cloth making. They were able to contribute in some way or other, even without fighting.
So it sounds like slightly different kinds of Quakers, because I don't recall them participating at all. They were pretty adamant about their pacifism.
Actually, there were some who were
they
called,
had some fighting Quakers, of course.
Exactly.
Yeah.
They were
like
given
the Pembertons
that name,
and
fighting
like that.
Quakers.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that, there again were individuals who, yes, they were Quaker in their belief, but at some point, as the war dragged on, they saw that they needed to do it. It was sort of a moral obligation that they felt that they were letting their, perhaps letting their neighbors down. But what I was mentioning, how they could sometimes avoid the service, was the federal supply tax. In this region, it was levied in different areas at different times. In Bedford County, there was one in 1779, there was one in 1781, and 1782. And during those three times, you were basically, it was called a supply tax, and if you did not pay the tax, it sort of indicated that you had loyalist sympathies.
I see.
Usually people who did not pay the tax tended to just quietly leave and, like I say, go down into the Kentucky Valley area where they wouldn't be bothered. But, or you had individuals who openly brought on aggression like the Tories. But the Quakers were allowed to pay the tax, and if they paid it double, then they were not questioned then.
I don't know if you know the answer to this question, and I didn't discuss this with you before the program, but I just was curious because this just popped into my mind. Several of members of the population of this part of the country actually fled to Canada during this period of time because they were loyalists and they didn't want to get involved in this. Did that happen anywhere around here or not?
There are some noted, yes. The site, of course, it was part of Bedford County at the time, but the site, which is now Hollidaysburg in Blair County, that site was actually owned by Harry Gordon. And Harry Gordon was known, he was a wealthy man, and he was known to have loyalist tendencies. When it came about that it was questioned, are you going to take up the patriot cause or whatever, he went to England.
Yeah.
The thing is, a lot of the estates of loyalists like that were forfeited. And because Harry Gordon's lands were forfeited, that's how Adam and William Holliday were able to then take possession of it and where you now have the town of Hollidaysburg.
Well, we're going to have just a few minutes left. We're speaking with Larry Smith of the Bedford County Historical Society about his wonderful exhibit here about the Revolutionary War. I just want to look at one more panel here that's interesting. The war on the home front. Does this mean the people of Bedford County were manufacturing things for the war effort, or what was going on?
No, that's actually an interpretation of how the war came into this area. Excuse me. And especially in 1781, you had a group of Indians who had attacked settlers in the Woodcock Valley area, which is north of Saxton and going into Huntington. A group of the militia were called out under Captain William Phillips. He brought a group of 13 individuals total down southward to see what was going on, to give aid to the residents if they needed and so forth. They stayed overnight at an abandoned house and of one of the settlers. The following morning, whenever they got up and started preparing their day, they discovered that the cabin was surrounded by Amerindians. Now, a fight ensued. The Indians basically set fire to the roof of the house, and the militia inside knew that there was no way that they could do anything. I mean, their escape, there was no escape for them. So they asked for surrender. The Amerindians took them, marched them all except for Captain Phillips and his son Elijah, who they actually took into captivity for a couple years. The other ones were tied to trees, scalped, shot with arrows, and so forth. So that's where you have the Indian Phillips Massacre Monument over near Saxton. Now, the reason I point that out is, again, the war being brought into the county, there were at least two Tories known to have been with the Indians, probably inciting them. So that may not have actually ever occurred had it not been that the Tories, with their loyalist and tendencies to aid the British by causing this disruption.
Larry Smith, I could talk to you all day about this, but we're out of time, but I just want to thank you. This is terrific. And how long does this exhibit run?
Okay, we're going to have our opening on May 16th, and it's going to run through the entire year. It may extend a little bit past December, but yes.
That's terrific. Year. Well, you have plenty of time to get over and see it, and May 16th, of course, it's all set up in here now, beautiful, but thank you very, very much for doing this. I really appreciate
thank
it.
You.
Larry Smith is a volunteer for the Bedford County Historical Society, and he's done such a magnificent job. You just got to get over and see this. I want to thank you again. Bedford County Speaks was presented this morning by DestinationDelco.com. From Philly to the Brandywine, that's DestinationDelco.com, and by Thomas Chevrolet Subaru, right here in Bedford, saving you time, money, and worry for over 100 years. I look forward to joining you next time, right here on News Talk 1310 WBFD. Until then, enjoy your weekend. This is Lloyd Roach.
You have been listening to Bedford County Speaks. Listen each Saturday, beginning at 8:30, to hear about the work, lives, and lifestyles in Bedford County. Bedford County Speaks is a presentation of the News and Public Affairs Department of News Talk 1310 WBFD.
Thanks for listening.